Such individual has a different prime mover in his soul. If you know, if you're close with, if you have a friend that is, that his prime mover of the soul is the mind, to an extent, of course, everybody has a different level, and you recognize that he did something wrong to you, he wronged you in a certain way, or somebody, or wronged somebody else, so then, really, actually the chiyuv is in the case where, the chiyuv is in the pasuk, is in the case where friendship is involved, that's primarily the chiyuv. So rather than the friendship, if you don't tell him, what's going to happen is that you're going to harbor a hatred against him. That's what it says. So if you so what does it mean? It means say that if you don't, you have a friend, and you really harbor a certain animosity towards him because of something that he did. Now this really will destroy the friendship because you'll hate him in your heart. You should bring it out in a way that you're not going to destroy the friendship, and discuss it with him. And if he's a good person, so either he'll explain it to you, or else he'll admit that he made a mistake. So, what? Essential form. That's the essential form of the mitzvah. But in general. However, it's not just between you and a friend. It's between anybody. It's anybody. But the Rambam says, so if you recognize that he's doing something wrong, and you know that he's conducive towards criticism and towards perfecting himself, so then you should do it in a way that he'll accept it. But if it's possible to be mechol shefshu be'al limchos v'ayin emelcha nitfas ba'avan elu kivan she'efshel limchos ba'am. Yeah, of course, if a person, I'm not trying to belittle the mitzvah of chayach techiach. You have to know where it is, but the reason why they showed you the story without a kind is because predominantly the motivation is a positive one. Where's the realm again? Which prayer was it in? Right. The Rambam is in Perek Vav Halacha Zayin. Okay. At any rate, the reason why I tell you the story about Aaron is to show you that there was no sin in his heart, that he wasn't satisfying the base motivation, and also because it's predominantly the most important method. That the perfected state of an individual, in the state where when a person is his soul is in total harmony, he doesn't harbor any animosity. He only has Ava for the Brius. That's what it is. Okay. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu do it? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu do it? But by Aaron it says a whole base Yisrael. The answer is because there were two distinct functions. So that Moshe received and that Aaron was. There are two distinct functions that each one did. Moshe and Aaron. Moshe's function was really to give over the system. To give over the system. To give over the Dvar Hashem. Aaron's function was to establish it. You see? Aaron's function was to implement the system. It was a different role that Aaron played. Different role. Also, by the way, with regard to Techacha, somebody asked me before, what about that I said that Techacha is a difficult thing to do? You know, the Rashi says in Dvarim, why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu give Techacha only before he died? It says, Mimi Lomad? Mi Yaakov. Because Yaakov said that Reuven Bini, he was Machiach his son Reuven before he died. It says, Reuven Bini, Lomalo Achachtiv Kalashanam Alalu, Kidei Shelo Yehe Hoylech, Vedoyveg Be'esavachi. That's what he says. So what is that Chazal? That's what Moshe Ben is. Af Moshe, Loyachicham Alasamach Lamisa. Alasamach Lamisa, person can tolerate it. But before that, he would go and he'd embrace Esav. What does that show you? It shows you again that techacha is a very difficult thing to for a person to make somebody else game by. Meisel has gained through Techachas, very difficult thing. You see, Yaakov Avinu didn't do a Reuven also.
What?
This is where the person that is the person who's receiving Techacha recognizes that it's an objective thing, because he's about to die anyway. Very good point, Avi. He's about to die anyway, so why should he do it? But before that, he attributes it to a personal thing. And that's why, on the contrary, it has a bad effect. Something personal, because he cannot. It's a way that he, it's a device, a mechanism that he uses in order that he shouldn't have to see the imperfection in himself. He'll use any mechanism. So his role was to bring down the Chukei Hashem. Aaron was ready to implement the system. Again, having me tamei shel Aaron Hakohen means that a person, in order to perfect himself, should partake of that situation. He should perfect himself and think into his own emotions with regard to the situation of Oyev Shalom and Rod of Shalom. That's when he really will perfect himself. And then there was Moshe Rabbeinu was what are you going to do? I mean, you're not going to perfect yourself through that. This means that the situation to be like Aaron requires an overhaul of the soul. And if a person wants to perfect himself, he should partake of that. Aaron HaKayin reached the people more than Moshe Rabbeinu did, in a sense. Why? Because of this perfection that he had. You see? A certain way he reached the people more. That's why he said, and that was for implementing the system, he was the one that was more important. That perfection was more important for implementing the system. That's what it says, Vivko, so called Beis Yisrael. Okay, so the Tam Chacham was a lot of lies. So they asked the Reb Chaim Eiser, I think. He said, why is the what about the pasuk that says that Vashaketecha, it's an esoterza, you have to keep away from, you're not allowed to lie. It's Vashaketecha. So they said like this. He says that really Midvashaketecha, Reb Chaim said, is not a separate mitzvah. Because you see in the Torah is there's Tayag mitzvahs. That's not one of them. Why isn't that one of them? He says, because it comes under the mitzvah of Halachta Bidrachav. You should go in the ways of God, in the ways of God truth. Truth is one of his ways. So he said, but in the one of the cases, like for instance, Talmud Chacham is allowed to lie if you ask him how many Masechtas he knows. So if he learned from Hefer Shas, he's allowed to say, I don't know. If he learned from Masechta, he's allowed to say, I don't know the Masechta. Why? Because the Anivus is another meter of God. See? So the question is, when you have a situation where you have a toss-up between two, which one prevails? So that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that Anivus prevails over Emes. And that's why over here also, Shalom, the Pasuk says by Avram Avinu, that God changed what Sarah said to Avram in order that Avram shouldn't feel bad. See? Because the Midah of Shalom overrules the Midah of Emes. Doesn't mean you're allowed to lie. But in a certain situation, we have a conflict. So you have to make a decision between one or the other, so you have to see which one overrides which. That's what Chazal.
So we mentioned having the Talmud of Shel Aaron. Okay. So what does it mean? We explained that really Aaron and Moshe had two different roles to play. That the Pasuk says, "Emes the Shalom is Gushu, Emes the Moshe, and Shalom the Aaron." So really, there was Moshe Ben was the one that received the ideas, transmitted the ideas. He's the one that. That was responsible for giving over the corpus of Torah, the knowledge, and Aaron was the one that was responsible for implementing the system. That's what it means by Shalom. Shalom means to create a harmonious situation. We say Oseh Shalom b'mromos. What does it mean? The pasuk in Iyot. Oseh Shalom b'mromos means that the Gemara means in the celestial areas, means the universe. So in the areas of the universe, there's harmony. Gemara, there's Shalom, there's harmony, because it's a harmonious system. Those who study physics are always impressed with the harmony that exists in the universe. That's what it means, that's the Shalom Gemara. There's a harmony there. Kuya says Shalom Aleinu means that same the God who is the creator of the harmonious system that exists in the universe, should also bring that harmony to human life, to human social order, which really doesn't have harmony the way it exists now. That's what the statement is. So the Aaron was Shalom. It means he was the one that implemented the system and created the harmonious social order. Moshe Rabbeinu was the one that presented the system, gave over the system, gave over the ideas. He was creative in the ideas and gave over the ideas, and I was the one that implemented the system. That's why it's MS the Shalom Nefgashu. MS the Shalom Nefgashu. These two together, this combination, is what was necessary to establish the Klal Yisrael. Now, when it says Heavenly Talmid of Shel Aaron, what it means is that even though Aaron acted that way because of the specific role that he had to play, so, and Moshe Rabbeinu acted according to the role that he had to play, but if a person wants to have perfection, so that which Aaron did is something which brings a person to perfection. Not talking about a person who has a specific role. Okay? It's speaking about an individual who wants to gain perfection. Has a lomad mi Aaron. You have to learn from Aaron. What does it mean learn from Aaron? Not from Moshe. It means to say that the role that he played exhibited a certain type of perfection which is important for you if you want to gain perfection. You understand what I mean? He did it because he was in that position. If he was in the position of Moshe Rabbeinu, he would go on Moshe Rabbeinu again. Not a defect in Moshe. But that which he did exhibits a certain type of perfection. And if you want to really perfect yourself, you should do that action for your own purpose in order to perfect yourself. He did it because that was the role he had to play. Right? But you should do it in order to perfect yourself. That's what it means. Having me come eat a filara. You understand what I mean? Doesn't mean that Moses' role is inferior. It means to say the two were, they did it because of the specific situation that they found themselves in. But if you are an individual that's seeking perfection, what you should do is you should embrace the role of Aaron. Because that will be the one that will give you perfection. Now, why is it the one that gives you perfection? If you're doing it for a different reason than him, he did it because it was necessary to establish a social order. But you should do it for perfection. Why is it the one that... What is it in Aaron that really establishes perfection? What is there? See, Chazal held that if a person acts properly in accordance with reality, that it has an effect on his inner self, and it keeps in front of his mind's eye the two ideas. That's why Chazal always say that always stress the importance of a person acting in accordance with the two ideas. So, just like one philosopher put it, just like healthy actions lead to a healthy body, actions which are ethically correct lead to a perfected soul. So, therefore, Chazal say like this. Why is this really the Aaron's activities? Why are they, those actions, why are they the ones that lead to perfection? You see, because what does Aaron do? Ayev Shalom's a radio Shalom. Right? Ayev is a Brias and a Tavon Atera. What it means is that he was concerned with the universal good. That which is most destructive to an individual is basically his egocentricity. So Chazal say that if a person acts in accordance with the way Aaron acted, and he is concerned with establishing the order. Establishing the order, he recognizes that the system is bigger than his own personal self. Okay? The recognition that the important thing is establishing the system. Then he will. Then this will lead him to perfection. Ayeh said, "Brias and Makavon Atera," and Ayeh Shalom Vedasom. It means to say that his actions indicate, or his actions lead to the conclusion that there is a system. The important thing is the system should exist harmoniously. It's not personal concern. They remove, by this action, he removed the part of his own megalomania, his own egocentricity. And this is the thing that will most affect him. Because the way, what it means like this, that the man is involved, what is he involved with basically? He's involved with establishing the good for others, for the system. That's what he's involved in. Now that's his primary involvement, okay? And then this takes him away from the concern for the self. What it does actually is, it puts his mind's eye on universal perfection. Perfection which is objective and impersonal. And that's what it does. Drives him into the area of the objective and the impersonal perfection. I'm saying it's not important. That's the way for a person to achieve perfection. The question is that a person who's perfected does things like the Rambam says naturally, which means for his own enjoyment, right? So that being the case, so why don't we say that he is also egocentric, right? What's the answer? Here's an example. Let's say, for instance, a person enjoys the fact that he's being honored by other people. They make a big banquet for him, and he's being honored, so he enjoys it, right? That's one type of enjoyment. What about the enjoyment of a person that is riding in the country and sees a beautiful scenery? He's awed by the scenery. That's another kind of enjoyment. In both cases, it's enjoyment. But what is the difference between the two? One case, there's an appreciation of something which is external to the self. There's an appreciation of something which is external to the self. It's true, there's enjoyment in both cases, but the enjoyment stems from the fact that the person is appreciating something which is external to the self. Whereas in the case of the person who was at the dinner, you see, where they're honoring him, his enjoyment is the appreciation of the self. Now, the difference between an egocentric individual and non-egocentric is that the egocentric individual's appreciation can only be related to the object of the self. You understand what I mean? Whereas it's not the enjoyment. Enjoyment, the fact that a person enjoys something is no indication of egocentricity. A person enjoys an activity which is enjoyment stems from an activity which is in line with the way the soul is functioning, with what the prime mover of the soul is. The way the soul functions, that's what he enjoys. Now, a corrupt soul will enjoy a corrupt pleasure. Okay? Now, a soul which is a good soul will enjoy a healthy soul will enjoy a healthy pleasure. The enjoyment always stems from the fact that the soul is functioning in line with its nature. Okay? Now, if the soul only appreciates the self, that's the soul area of appreciation. It's not reality, but it's the self. So then it will only enjoy those activities which are related to the self. And that's why those who are involved in imperfection, it's very difficult to remove them from the imperfection. Because you try to tell them they should enjoy something else, but they can't, because their soul is structured in a way that this is what they enjoy. You follow? Similarly, a person whose appreciation is for an external appreciation, so this is what he enjoys. Now, Since the fact that he enjoys it doesn't make it egocentric, because the enjoyment stems from the fact that the soul is functioning in accordance with its nature. But what is the nature? What is its nature? Its nature is that it appreciates an external thing. As a matter of fact, that's why people who study the universe can enjoy their own smallness. They recognize how little they are, and it doesn't disturb them. Why? Because what they enjoy is the total scene. And the fact that they are really very small in terms of total reality doesn't disturb them. On the contrary, that's perceived as a pleasure, because it's part of the view which gives them the enjoyment. So their own smallness is not a disturbing factor. That's the opposite of egocentricity. You understand what I mean? But a person who's the whole world only exists for himself, the only time he has enjoyment is when he is demonstrated that everything exists only for him. And that really is the rasa. That's the rasa. The rasa is the individual whose everything he does is only to show or to demonstrate that he is the center of all existence. Or the tzaddik on the contrary. Tzaddik is the quality of mercy, ben is mercy on the mode. That's the highest meter. But he enjoys his own smallness. So having become here to Lara means that the person can enjoy, can appreciate the implementation of the system. Appreciates and enjoys the harmony. So it's an enjoyment which is outside of the self. That is a perfection. Even though it's an enjoyment, the fact that he enjoys it doesn't mean that it's egocentric. Enjoyment stems from the fact that the soul is acting in accordance with its nature. Yeah. You understand? You see the difference? The self can only act in a way in which it will receive enjoyment. And that's because the enjoyment is the result of the self acting according to the way it's designed. That has to be. But what Yagas maintains is that what happens with the Rasa is involved in an enjoyment which is conflicting, which has conflict. The first conflict is essentially conflict with reality, because he's trying to maintain a false reality that he's at the center of all existence. It doesn't work. So his enjoyment is one which necessitates chaos, internal chaos. That's why the prophet says, "V'ashoyim kayam nigra." Russia is turbulent like the sea, a turbulent life. Whereas a tzaddik who recognizes reality and appreciates what the true reality is, in spite of the fact that he owns only a small role in reality, he's in line with reality, so his soul is not in a state of chaos. That's why the tzaddik has a better life. Who are you? That's who? That's Nigid Shimo Ovad Shimei. Udalo Moses Yosef. Udalo Yalas Kitolachayev. Udistamesh Bitago Cholach. Very cryptic writing. Alright, let's take the Mephashim. Nigid Shimo, let's take the first one. Nigid Shimo, Nigid means a nugget. A nugget means a person who is a very respected individual. Famous. Nigid Shimo. Man of fame. Over to me means the same as his name is lost. Alright? Neither of you is struck with a contradiction. Okay. Let's take a look at Rashi. I'm not sure we could understand Rashi's chat, but there is something interesting. He does quote an interesting thing. Take a look. Call me Shimo Nimshach, Rashi says. Va'ola Ladula. Anyone whose name is drawn and finally rises to greatness, becomes a great famous person, Nisrasom is Karevit. His death draws near. Okay? Kamoshama Lamaila Biyosef. Just like I said before, by Yosef Asadi. That a person shouldn't want to know it's a bonus. Because a bonus destroys Makaveras by law. Alright? Destroys a person. Now, fine. And he says, then Rashi adds, Umin aposik nimsa fiyua. And we find support for this from a posik and mislay. Interesting posik and mislay. What does the posik say? Lefnei shever ga'on. Before the downfall, shever is break. Before the breakdown, before the downfall, ga'on is splendor. Interesting thing. Klama, Rashi says, kodem si yovolo lo'odam shever. Before a person has a downfall, Yala Ladula. He will have a time when he rises to greatness. Okay? What's difficult to understand in Rashi, really? What's difficult to understand in Rashi? Right, one question is, it's the same thing as before? Same thing as before, what was the edit? Alright. Now you could say that you could say that this was his member. You know, he included his member among three other members. You could say that there's a different unification. So it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a total repetition. Okay. All right. It doesn't always happen. It's a universal. There's some idea in the universal. So while somebody may escape here and there, maybe say universally, the person who is part of the lives a life of a crime, organized crime, mafia, will get killed. But there's always a male entry. The exceptions are real. The general rule, there is some idea, there is some universal, some generality. Yes. It says, the downfall, what does downfall mean? The downfall means that he suffers a loss of esteem. Right? Doesn't mean he's going to die. So what does his first one say? Negit Shemo Avat Shemei. It doesn't say Avad Atmo. It says Avat Shemei. That is, Rashi teaches you speaking about a physical death. About a physical death. Now there is, you see, the Rambam also says that a person, the way a person lives, affects his longevity. As I don't seem to hold that way. A person has a good life, quiet life, a life of harmonious existence, to live longer than if he has a life of stress and strife. So the Rambam seems to say this. The Rashi seems to be saying this over here. I don't know if it's proven medically, but Nisasa Miskarevis seems to be. I mean, now today they say more and emphasizes more, but this is. The good life is if a person lives a proper life, he will live longer. He will live longer. According to it's not the length of life that they're after, but the fact that he lives longer shows the quality of his life. So if a person lives a few more years, if he lives a few less years, that really isn't a difference. Such a big difference as what the quality of the life that he leads is. See? So Nisach and Miskarevis means that the person's, the fact that he dies earlier shows that there was something lacking, something eating him away during his lifetime. That's what the that's what Rashi seems to say. But he seems to say that he's referring to a physical type of downfall. Person who has Rabbonis has two concerns which are in constant conflict. Person who doesn't have any Rabbonis can have a very good life. Why? He only has to be worried about one thing. What the good is? What is the good for my soul? What is the good? That's all he's concerned with. The person who is an Rabbonis, he has to be concerned with what the good is and how this good is going to be perceived by others who are not in a perfected state. And he has to try to get the two to work together. There's a constant struggle. Impossible to get out of it. And the struggle is one which doesn't allow him to have peace. Because it involves his very existence. He's always involved in it. That's the concern. If he does this, people say this, they say that. Is it the right thing? Say this. It's a constant struggle. He can never really have any harmony, any peace. So that's why, that's the story of Yosef, wasn't it? Yosef wasn't one that loved the Rabbanim. That's the Rambam's shot. Rambam's shot was he liked it, it's an imperfection. Rashi learned the situation of Rabbanim itself is one which is a stressful, inherently a stressful existence. Yosef had to do it, so he had to sacrifice himself. To become what is the pasuk that Rashi quotes? Let's understand what the pasuk means. Forget about Rashi for a moment. L'shnei shever ga'on. Happens to be a beautiful pasuk in its own right. L'shnei shever ga'on. What does it mean, l'shnei shever ga'on? Before the downfall, there is a time of glory. Splendor. What is the implication of the prophet? What's the implication of the prophet? Read you the rest of the prophet. L'shnei chisholon gova ruach. Chisholon. Chisholon means stumbling. So, gova ruach. There's a haughtiness of the spirit. What? What you're saying is like this, that there is the same cause which is responsible for the Gaon is really responsible for the Sheva. Actually, it's on the way to the Sheva. But on the way to the Sheva, there's going to be, before the Sheva, there's going to be a tremendous outburst of splendor. See? And it's going to be, but actually, the cause is already there. The cause is already there for the Sheva. Right. Now what is it, how does it work? Let's understand how it works. That's the implication of the prophet. L'shnei shever ga'on. Right? It doesn't say Acharei Gaon Shefer. As a matter of fact, that's what's difficult in Rashi. Rashi should be Acharei Gaon Shefer. That the Gaon leads to causes therefore. But the pasuk is of Nei Shefer Gaon. If Nei Shefer Gaon means you're on the road to the Shefer. The cause of the Shefer, all the factors are already in existence. Okay? But before the Shefer, boom, you're going to tremendous glory. And then down. That's it. Okay? Why? What does it mean, really? What does it mean? What is this shot in the pocket with Nei Shefer Gaon? What does it mean? What does the pasuk mean? How does it work? It works very simply. A person, who is an individual that really has or actually brings about himself glory? It's a person usually who's after it. He's after it. Now, actually, the fact that he's after it indicates that he has a tremendous corruption of the soul. So since he's after it, and this is part of his corruption, he will be successful at achieving it. But in the end, the corruption is going to break through. The corruption is going to break through. Why? Because since this is something which dominates the soul, so it's not a rational thing. The reason why is rational? Why can't he just have the gone? And that's it. Just like a person can achieve many things in life, let him be able to achieve the gone. That's it. Achieve the glory. So what's the answer? The answer is because this emotion to have the greatness is an emotion which you cannot make peace with that emotion. If a person is under the sway of that emotion, there is no compromise. Like one philosopher said, a person who enjoys honor will enjoy honor even from the smallest person, a kid. A kid will give him honor, he'll be very happy. Why? There is no end to the amount of enjoyment that he can perceive from this. And even the smallest way. Yeah, that's right. They have a picture of that. Yeah, Rockefeller gives dimes out to kids. Right, that's right. Okay, yeah. Of course, he was a murderer. He killed 14 families of minors and their children, wiped them out. He paid people to kill them because they were going to strike. But those children, he wasn't worried about. But the person, therefore, who is motivated by the desire for greatness, he has to be captivated by a certain irrationality. Now, the irrationality has to take hold of his soul to the point where he has to slip. He has to slip. Because it's not something that he can deal with rationally. But before he slips, he will be successful. Ordinarily, will be successful. It takes a while to catch up. The reality takes a while for the reality to catch up. That's what makes ever gone. You have a case like you had recently, I don't want to mention names, in this area. You had a case with tremendous splendor, tremendous gone. People were involved in business. It was known all over the country, all over the world. But actually, the whole thing was corrupt. Was corrupt from the very, very, very beginning. But before the breakdown, the downfall doesn't come so quickly. It takes a while to investigate, even conceal the hidden. But before the big downfall, before the shiver was gone. That's the way it works. What does the prophet say? What does the Shlomo Melech say? Shlomo Melech tells you one thing. He tells you to be suspicious of the splendor of the gone. That's what he teaches you. A person should not be taken in by the by this splendor, by this greatness, by this aura. The snake shiver gone. That's what Shlomo Melech is telling you. Now when you see gone, when you see the splendor, you should be a little suspicious. What kind is it? It could be that it's not out rolling. The fact that there might be a true God. Possible. But on the whole, it usually that usually is a slow process. The one that tremendous outburst, generally speaking, a person should be suspicious of. It usually comes from corrupt sources which are trying to produce that effect. And since they're trying to produce the effect, and they're overcome by the emotions, so eventually they're going to have to make an irrational move, and they're going to be detected. That's really what the pasuk of Shemesh ever gone there. Nice pasuk, beautiful pasuk. That's right. You know, Hagaiva Vagon, the Gova Ruach, who Sibo La Sheva, the La Kisholo, the Zemho, and it's also Sibo for the, that's right, for the, where is the Sibo? The Gaiva actually, there's two parts of the pasuk. The Snei Sheva Gaon, the Snei Kisholo, Gova Ruach. What's the two parts of the pasuk? Why is it, why is it duplicated? Because the first part of Snei Sheva Gaon is giving you a description of the social situation. It's showing you the effects, the Sheva and the Gaon. The second part is going into the causes. The Snechi Shalom is the personal stumbling where the individual falls, you see. Govaruach is the cause, the individual cause. One is giving you the picture on the societal level, the result. And then the second part of the pasuk is an analysis of the causes. That's why the pasuk is duplicated. Okay, that's the pshat. We're just discussing there's an inherent contradiction in fame. Because fame, what does fame mean really? Fame means that you admire this individual because of something of value. Well, why is it? Fame is an admiration, right? Admiration is because he has something, right? So what does he have? They say the man came out with a fantastic idea, right? Now, so the idea must be worth something, and since it's worth something, they say, wow, this man really has something, and that's why we should admire him, right? Then a person says, I would like to come up with a good idea so that I could become famous, which inherently is a contradiction. Because if you say you'd like to come up with a good idea in order to be famous, what you're saying is the idea really isn't worth anything. It's only worth the fame. But the fame has to be because of something good that you have. But that thing isn't good. That thing is only to achieve the fame, so the fame rests on nothing. What? It's an inherent contradiction. It's an inherent contradiction. What? Yeah. What? What we're saying is that the very premise of fame must premise something. The very idea of fame premises that the idea itself is the good. Now, if the idea itself is the good, if that is the good, so then a person should value, and then there must be some value and some benefit in the idea. So if there's some benefit in the idea, then the person must should enjoy the idea for the idea's sake. And if the fame occurs, it should be something which is accidental. In fact, in the fame itself, the fame of the person is always increased insofar as he's not interested in fame. You'll notice that though. Okay? If you'll depict an individual who has a great idea and really is just concerned with his great idea, not with the fame, he will have greater fame than a person who does the idea for fame itself. Because the moment he does it for fame, it shows that he doesn't really value the idea. And people recognize that as a weakness. So the reason that people, fame actually, true fame can only be accidental. Can only be accidental. It's an interesting thing. But Lefnei Sheva Gaon says that when you see this tremendous flare, you should realize that the person who's doing it could be trying to bring it about intentionally. Then it's just a matter of time until he's going to be uncovered and he'll be destroyed. Yes. According to the way we're learning this verse, the snake ever gone, the cause really began, it's insidious, and the first expression is gone, next step is Sheva. Alright? Just saying that there are two types, and a person should be wary of the other possibility, which is very prevalent. Very prevalent. It's not saying it's always the way, it's very prevalent. Now, what that passage that Rashi quotes has to do with the Gitchimor of Atzimei, I really don't know. I mean, it's a beautiful passage. Well, I don't know what it has to do with Nagishma with Tumay. Moreover, I don't understand another thing. Why didn't, if Rashi says that he's getting support from the Pasuk, why didn't Rashi bring that support before when he mentioned the incident with Yosef? You know what I mean? He should have brought that support before. Why over here? Good point. Yeah, that's a good point you're reading there. That the Gaon itself, he's saying that the Gaon itself, once he reaches the state of gone, then he gets completely carried away. And then it brings him, that's right. And then it causes him to even more, that's when he slips.
That's when it cooks. It becomes more cooked. Because the soul becomes...
If you're not getting the thing, it might go away from you.
You know? You're right. The corruption has a more corrupting effect on the soul.
Success.
Yeah. Okay. The thing is that the memory doesn't... The idea of the pasuk is a very nice one, but the memory doesn't fit that idea. Because the memory says, Negit Shemovit, may I point to Rashi, means, Kosu Nishi Shemo, Nimshi Chol, Legulam, Yisrasa, Meskarevich. And the same thing as you mentioned before, like Yeshe. That's a separate thing altogether. What does that have to do with Nei Yisrasa going? Two different things. Say, just Negit Shemovit Shemay means with Nei Yisrasa going. That's good. That's good. Negit Shemovit Shemay. You're right. That's good. But the problem with Rashi is, what he brings in with Yasek and what he says Misasa Miskarevis, that's a different idea altogether. He just cut out half a Rashi. He just said a Pasuk and Misrei, the shot comes out very nice. The Gitz Ma'av it's made. Why Rashi brings in Yasek and he brings in Misasa Miskarevis? I mean, I don't know. Is the Amri Negid Shemo? Call me Shein a Lomaid Ella Kadei Ligadel Shemo Lekroso Rebbe. What does it mean? It means a person that only learns for one purpose. You mentioned, the same thing with a person that's a rogue. A person wants to be the same as a rogue. So, is that the same thing? Rashi says, yeah. The Yisrami Negitshima means a nugget over here. Rashi means a person that is known as a, what does Rashi say? Komishin Alomadazeshi Ligadl Shimo, the Grosser Rebbe. Why does Rashi say that? Because over there, what he means like this, Nugid, over there the word Nugid doesn't mean just famous. But Nugid means a person that represents the ultimate. That's only in Torah. That's only in Torah. If a person is famous, he's a famous businessman. But a famous businessman or a famous statesman is still not recognized by humanity as the ultimate perfected individual. Great. But not the ultimate. The ultimately perfected individual has to be in the area of perfection itself, which is Torah. So Rashi says, that's what Rashi says, that some say it's going on that. It means Negid Shema, Negid means not only in terms of how famous he is, but qualitatively also. Negid Shema, the man who is known as the perfected individual. Okay? But how? Call me, he's learned. He only learns to go to Gadel Shemal, the Kroser Rebbe. He wants to be known as a great scholar. Great Rebbe. So then we say, then Chazal say, Ovad Shemay. His name is lost. Why does it work that way? Anyway, this is exactly what Rashi calls Waimei Tera Shalol Shema. Rashi says, what is Shalol Shema? Today to Yikore Rav. And he should be considered, he should be called a Rebbe. Okay. So why is this so? Because the person whose purpose in learning is, in order to have a great name, to be considered a great Rebbe, so he cannot really be after the true ideas. Because the true ideas, unfortunately, you see, are a little abrasive. Generally speaking, are abrasive to the general population. So if he wants to reach the general population and he wants to become famous, he has to distort the ideas. He has to distort the ideas. It's an interesting thing. Somebody has mentioned to me not too long ago, he said that there were certain rabbanim, first of the old generation, not old generation, but the first generation, like 40 years ago, 50 years ago. He remembers that there were certain rabbanim 50 years ago, very famous rabbanim. They are known. People came to America. These are Bunim were known. Today you never even hear their names. See why? Because these are Bunim that were famous. They were famous as rabbis. Because they were able to receive the admiration of the public because of their public addresses. But the ideas in the public addresses weren't really ideas that were of great significance. See? They were just ideas that people enjoyed. So, if you did Shemar, very famous at the time, very famous that people enjoy him. But Avot Shemay, I mean, after he ceases to please the people this way, his name is lost because there was nothing really inherent of inherent value in the ideas. It was just an experience that the people had because of his way, his manner of speaking, and the way he was able to make people enjoy this.
Comes from wanting to do
that. He's a real Talmud Chacham. Why should he do that? Why shouldn't he rather sit down and formulate the true ideas and help the succeeding generation? He's a popular man. The popular man, the man of popularity, is a person. That's what he's interested in. That's what he enjoys. So the most popular Abunim of 50 years ago could never hear the names anymore. Why? Because the whole thing is over. They did Shema. At that time, they were very popular because people enjoyed them. They enjoyed hearing their words. Because you made them, it appealed to them. Actually, really, what is it? What is a good speaker? What is the enjoyment of a good speaker? Good speaker is somebody, when a person listens to a good speaker and is really thrilled by the speech, what it means to say is that he shares the same ideas and would love to be able to express them the same way. I understand that that if the ideas are shared already by the people who are listening, that it's not really a very informative situation. Not going against their grain. So since that is the case, the one who is the popular speaker, of by definition, cannot really be saying anything that's of substance. The whole populace is reasonably based on the populace of the Baizbaiz. They're right. He gave it to everybody. He told them good. It means that that's in line with their philosophy and their way of life. So by definition, it has to be something that's very shallow. That's the way the Hamon, that's what the Hamon believes in. People who are interested in the popularity, you know, during their time, they have the popularity and they like to think of themselves as being part of something which is not just a temporary thing. I'd like to think of themselves as being part of something which is a tremendous thing, which will go on for generations and generations. Because the ego of man cannot be satisfied. The ego of man is so great, you see, that he has to extend his lifetime in fantasy in order to be able to achieve more satisfaction. So even after his short life isn't enough to absorb enough ego satisfaction, he has to think of himself enjoying it even after he's dead. It'll keep on going. But the Avachimei, even in their own terms, it's not something I don't think that they would come to grips with. They would accept. But regardless, we're just speaking about the phenomena. We don't care really about what they, about whether they're happy with it or not. The point is, I would say that they wouldn't be happy with the idea that their name's going to be lost so quickly. You see? But regardless, even if a person is that realistic, they just want the fame, the temporary fame, fine. But it's still, the memory is true. They did Shema, all that Shema, it's a strange phenomenon. You know, they did Shema, so famous, and all of a sudden it's down. The reason is because they really haven't conveyed any ideas of substance.
That's the
reflect the value of their ideas. That's the second shot in Rashi. I'll tell you this. He's saying that a person, let's say, for instance, like Rav Moshe Feinstein is a great scholar, so he has tremendous fame. Now, a person that really wants fame should just follow his footsteps. Wants real fame. He'll even be more famous now, and he'll be more famous later. Right? So his question is that a person that wants fame shouldn't become a popularized rabbi.
Okay?
That's the second. That's second best. But why can't you have an individual who wants to, who learns really Shalom Lishma, right? And he wants to become famous. And he will achieve fame through the recognition, through the fact that he comes up with true ideas, good ideas, and others will recognize his good ideas, and then he'll become famous that way.
Right?
Yeah, that's right. He just says the true ideas in order to become famous for the true ideas, which is really a higher level of fame, you say, than the fame that these people are seeking. Right? Okay. How are we going to answer that question?
Well,
good question. The point is that was mentioned here was that that actually Mitel Shalol Shema Bola Shema, Rashi calls this Shalol Shema, so how come over here we say Nigit Shema Vachmei? We say that in the contrary, he's not going to do Shema, but he's going to be lost, right? The only lines that we got with Shema Tosh Rebbe, he's going to be lost. Now, but they would say Mitel Shalol Bola Shema. So apparently you see from the contradiction that not necessarily every time you have a Shalol Shema is going to be Bola Shema. Mitel Shalol Shema Bola Shema means that a person cannot seek perfection directly. If the very seeking is itself an egocentricity. But Mitel Shalol Shema Bola Shema, it can happen. It can happen to them. It happens. It doesn't necessarily mean it always works. doesn't necessarily mean it's always going to be that way. Because over here, Nigitshimovichimei means that he remains with the sole desire of being Nikrarat. Meaning he doesn't become perfected. So it doesn't always work. I mean, it's a good point that you mentioned it. But we have to answer this question. Yeah? It's an interesting pasuk. I think I mentioned it once before. Pasuk says, Zeicha Tzadik Levracha, V'shem Rishoyim Yerokei. So, it's an interesting thing. The pasuk says, Zeicha Tzadik Levracha. Why do we say Zeicha Tzadik Levracha? Zeicha means after he's gone. It's remembrance of Levracha. Why is he Levracha during his lifetime? And the same thing with the Shem Rishon Yerokev. That the name of the Rasha, after he dies, then it rots. But during his lifetime, it's very nice. What's the shot? Person, right. You see, the person who is the tzaddik, really lives in a way, it is an interesting thing, he lives in a way that is very disruptive to other people. Embrace it. Annoying, because he's living in a way that the others recognize his very existence is a refutation of their own lives. So they hate him, they dislike him. And that's only as long as he's alive. Once he dies, the personal animosity is gone. And it's an interesting thing, but somehow or other, humanity does recognize perfection. Something that always amazed me. Humanity does recognize perfection. I mean, Socrates in Athens was killed. He was given the hemlock. And yet, societies after him always admired the man for his courage, for his truth, you see. Not too many people identify with Miletus, or even know his name, you know, Socrates' accuser. They don't even know, they're not too familiar with him. But Socrates, people identify with him. People who read the story, all would certainly, if he was alive today, they definitely wouldn't, if they were in Athens, they wouldn't condemn him to death, but they'd give him the greatest award, right? And yet it would be hard to believe that society has made such progress so quickly. That the same society that reads this story is the perfected society. And yet, before the while actually occurred, this in Athens is so imperfected. You know? The answer, the truth of the matter is that if Socrates is here today, he'd also be condemned to die by the same society who reads the story and who admires it. But the reason is that he's dead. There's no problem. That's why the society recognizes him. That's Zecha Tzadik Levracha. That his very existence causes a problem. It's a break. But when he dies, people really have in their mind really do have a recognition of perfection. It's an interesting thing. Why they should have this? Why should the imperfect person recognize perfection and how? That's a very strange phenomenon. But it shows you that he somehow or other, the person does is aware of the corruption of his own soul. He does sense the corruption of his soul. And he does sense deep down that there is something there which he is trying to avoid and to cover up. When he sees the existing tzaddik, that becomes a tremendous threat. He recognizes he can't possibly break it. But somebody who died in the past, wonderful, tremendous praise. It's not a threat anymore. Contrary, somebody to honor. Now, the thing is like this, that the man of truth, during his lifetime, has to be gracious. Has to. Because he has to say things that people really don't want to hear. Hurts them. Or has to live in a way that's going to affect people that they won't like him. But what happens is like this. By the same token, a person who is interested in popularity will live in a way that people admire. Now, Rasha also says Shem Hashem Yerokev only later, but during his lifetime, on the contrary, the Rasha lives very nicely. People even have been known to be very happy to have underworld figures in their neighborhood. beautiful homes and this and that. How are you? Very nice. Fine. Respectable. Sure. No problem. But what happened? Why is that? Because the truth of the matter is the existence of the Rosh has the opposite effect. People are very happy to see the Rosh. Makes them feel very good. There's a certain enjoyment. And the ideas that he presents are those ideas which go along with the people. So flatters the people. Flatters the people, they enjoy him, they like him. But after he dies, when that subjective situation is removed, then you have the exact opposite. Then they just look at the idea. The idea that this is a wicked idea. He's a Russia. That came from Shani Rucket. Now, what happens like this? A person who, what you're saying, your phenomenon, your question was, why can't a person be the real, be really smart about the situation and present the true ideas and have fame like a Moshe Feinstein, which is even greater than the fame of a popular rabbi? The answer is like this. The answer is, a person who is overcome by the desire for fame is in a situation where he is overcome by a certain emotion. Now, the nature of an emotion is... kind of foolish things. Let's say, for instance, a person has a desire for drugs. And right now, he's under the sway of the emotional need for drugs. Now, he recognizes the tonsil. Even 2 hours ago, he may have been convinced that he's never going to take them again. This is harmful, it's ridiculous. But yet, when the urge comes along, and he's overpowered, not only will he take them, but he will tell himself, at the moment they take them, this is the right thing to do. Right now, this is different. Now it's different. It's not harmful of many years. I'll put letters at it. 2 hours ago, he was convinced he'd take one more. He said it. Now, it's fine. Now it's fine. It's good. The person must function at the time. He must exonerate his actions. Now what happens is the man who is overcome by emotion is a temporal creature. He's an individual who must act to satisfy act on the at the moment. The man is a moment. The emotions do not really project themselves too far in the distance. The emotions are interested in pleasure, which is at hand. It's not pleasure in 10 years or 20 years or after his death, but pleasure at hand is the biggest, has the biggest force. That's why a person under the sway of emotions makes foolish mistakes. And then later says, hey, how did I do this stupid thing? Well, somebody says, what do you mean? Didn't you see that's going to happen? The answer is, why didn't he see? Because the emotion is related to the present. Because it's not related to an abstract idea. It's related to the desires which are drawing upon it now, in the now, not in the future. So right now, things get distorted because of the pressure of the desire. Reality gets distorted. Then later, he sees he made a mistake, and he wonders how he did it, because later he's not under the influence anymore. So his mind can work straight. So therefore, he sees it was ridiculous. But at the time, there's a distortion process that takes place, because the emotion is always rooted in the now, you see. Now that's the same reason why that's the same reason why the person can't do what you suggested. But an individual who's under the sway, under the power of fame, is a person who's under the sway in the grip of a powerful emotion. This emotion is something that pulls at him right now. It wants fame now, and when the populace is standing there and waiting for that fame, he cannot say to himself, you know something, if I really don't warp my ideas and satisfy this great crowd that's right here in front of me today, when I give them ideas that are really true, they'll walk out of this place and they'll say, what do you say? See? But 50 years from now, this will be recognized. It'll take time, but after many years, it'll be recognized that these are true ideas. This is not going to satisfy the man of the emotion. The man is under the sway of the emotion. When he sees the crowd, he sees people right there in front of him, he has to respond in the now, because that's the nature of the emotion. So that's why it doesn't work. The suggestion doesn't work. You may find in science people who can do that. Mm-hmm. Because science has nothing to do with that's his field. He's in chemistry, and he has to make a breakthrough in chemistry. So of course, what he's doing is he just wants a breakthrough in order because he wants fame. Very possible. See? But that's not a person who has other outlets. He's limited to that specific situation. So naturally, that's the way it works. I mean, And Newton went crazy when they wanted to take away his original claim to the ideas. So, you know, not to say that doesn't mean necessarily he didn't appreciate the ideas at all, but you see that was a big thing, a big factor in his life. So people have been known to make scientific breakthroughs for fame. I mean, it's a common thing to them. But the point is they have no other option. But a person who's in a situation where he is supposed to represent perfection and he has large mass of people, you know, that are focusing on him, then when the masses are there at the moment, he cannot turn it down, because that requires a person who is not under the sway of the emotion. One is under the grips of the emotion, the now is much bigger, looms much larger than the future. That's why Plato said that people make a mistake because of short-sightedness. Because how does the typhus get a person? The typhus just distorts size. It's a distortion of size. What happens is he has a pleasure that's immediate, so this becomes very great in his mind. Right? And the benefit, which is in the future, becomes very small. So he makes a judgment based upon the mistaken size. You see? The pleasure, the immediate pleasure seems so great, and the one that sees it seems so small. It's like a person who's nearsighted. You can't see. But a person who has good vision will be able to see that in the future is greater than that which is in the present. It's a distortion in size, so to speak, that causes a person to corrupt and to make mistakes in life. That's the type of error. But that's the answer to why I can't do what you suggested.
Tremendous appreciation for Chazal. Well, you learn Masechet Avos, you know, the great chesed that they did for us by writing down this Masechet and really showing us what perfection is on an in-depth level. Every point, you know, it's an unbelievable Masechet. Unbelievable. Okay, let's go. We're up to Yud Gimel. Who are you? I'm in Negid Shemavet Shemei. We did it last time, right? Negid Shemavet Shemei. With the Lord Moses, Yosef. This was Hillel. With the Lord Moses, Yosef. With the Lord Yalef, Ketolachayov. With the Ishtamesh Betaga Cholov. Okay. So we'll take the next two. There's actually four statements here. The Gitchmavet Shemei, that's the first one. Next one is with the Lord Moses, Yosef. And with the law Yalef Ketolachayev, that's two and three, and the last one is the Shtamish B'Taga Cholah. Alright, what it means like this, let's take the second and third. With the law Mosif Yosef. What does it mean, the law Mosif? It means, literally, it means like this. A person that, it's a little bit of a play on words. With the law Mosif, a person that doesn't, the word Lahosif has two meanings. Sometimes it means to add. Sometimes it means to add. And sometimes it means to end. From the word sof. V'lo yosef od l'daita. Right? That's the pasuk. Right? Where it says, V'yakya Yehuda v'yama tzadko mimeni k'alkein lo nesati al shelavini. That's Lamed Ches pasuk chofav. V'lo yosaf od l'dato. So Rashi says, two pshatim. Yesh omim lo hosif. He didn't continue. He didn't continue to know her anymore. He didn't continue to live with her anymore. V'yesh omim lo pasach. Some say he didn't stop. He wasn't sure. He saw what a great tzedekah she was, so he continued to live with her. So there's a two pshatim. Because the word v'lo yosaf could mean two things. Either continue or I'll stop. Either from the word sof or from the word losif. So that's what it means over here. It says, Udalah Mosif Yosef. It's a play on the word. A person that doesn't continue should cease to exist. That's what it means. Okay? Udalah Mosif Yosef. Now, what does it mean? Let's take a look at the Rabbeinu Yehuda. Rabbeinu Yehuda says like this. Mishul Chacham, a person who is wise. Veina rotza lahosif chachma al chachma, someone does not wish to add any more knowledge to the amount of knowledge that he has. The yomar belibo, and he'll say to himself, kvar lamadati kol haTorah kula, I learned the whole Torah already. The ra'isi d'rochea nisivaseha, I saw the words, her ways and the paths, Mali Litzorazos. What are you this trouble for? Litzroach behevel yamai. Spend my days in this type of pursuit. Amoz bonenba. Lulavi nosi. What am I going to see more that I don't that I don't understand already? Yehi Ratzon, he says, Shezeho ish, this person, it should be his will that this person, Yomos, should die. Via Yosef Alamo. And he should die. V'loma Yichya, why should he continue to live? Acha Shekvar Kom Miloma, since he stopped learning. No reason for him to continue to live. Okay, that's the first statement. V'loma Yosef Yosef. Alright? Then he says further. The next one is Udelo Yalef, a person who doesn't learn, Ketola Chayev, is Chayev Ketola. Again, he should die. Chayev Mesa. Right. What did he say? He says, Mishlo Lomad Kolika, the first person really had learned, has a lot of knowledge. Very great Talmud Chacham. But he doesn't want to continue anymore. He says, I've seen it already. That's the first one. Second one is loyal, a person that has never learned in his life. Ketola chayev, he's chayev misa. Nishla loma kalika, a person that never learned Torah. Nimshel kabema, so he's equivalent to an animal. Kiloma nivra ba'olam, what was the purpose that he was created for? Lahavinu lahoros b'torah, the only purpose is that he should learn Torah, understand Torah. Shedrachar adachay noam. Vizeh shelo osak b'torah, and this person that didn't never learned Torah kol yomav all his life, v'oidenu marzik birish osa, and he continues to hold by his wickedness. You notice what he calls wickedness. Wickedness isn't really most people think of wicked as an evil person, a vicious person. No, evil means anything which is not perfection. So if a person does not learn, so that's evil. It's evil for man. Ein roi lichyos, afilu yom echad. He shouldn't live even one day. Afilu shor achas, and even 1 hour. So it's interesting. So he says you have two categories of people. A person that learned Torah, but doesn't want to continue anymore because he's seen it already. And another person who never learned. So the first one, he says, the law Moshef Yosef, he should die. With the law... Udalo Yalef, a person that never learned, is Chayev Misa. Okay, so the obvious question is, I mean, why, what's the difference? Why don't they just say, a person that doesn't learn is Chayev Misa? Why don't you just group them all into one statement? Why the breakdown? Why these two, why does he break it down into two separate categories? A person that has knowledge, doesn't want to continue to learn, and another person who never learned. Just say simply, a person that doesn't learn is Chayev Misa. That's all. If you know the first one, you certainly know the second one. Right? First of all, what is the practical difference between the two? The factual difference between the two. Before we define what the theoretical difference is between the two, let's just define what the factual difference between the two is. What is factually the difference according to Pirkei Avos, according to the statement of the what is the Tanayim? What is the Brahman? What?
One
large
and one down.
Yeah, no, but I mean to say in terms of his in terms of what he deserves, how will you distinguish between the two individuals? Okay? It says that the law Moshef Yosef, the one that doesn't want to continue to learn, he should die. When, at what point is he deserving of death? What point? When he stops learning. But till that point, he should live. Even though his philosophy was such that obviously it wasn't the correct philosophy, you see. But nevertheless, until that point, he deserves to live. Whereas the second one, you see, doesn't deserve to live at all at any time. That's the difference. That's the factual difference between the two decrees that each one receives. Okay? Alright. Now let's understand a little bit further. A little further. So how would you expand it a little bit? I mean, what would you say? What's the difference between the two? The difference between the two would seem to be that in the one inherently, his life is worthless. That's the second one, the one that never studies, that never learns. His life is inherently worthless. The other one, the one that learned, it's a functional question. That as soon as this function ceases, not that inherently he shouldn't live, you see, inherently he deserves death. You see, it means that functionally, it's a functional question. Now, when the function ceases, he stops learning, that at that point he should die. Whereas the other one's life inherently is worthless. That's what it means. By the way, when we're speaking about he deserves to die, we are speaking about a punishment over here. It's not an onus. Punishment is chayav misa as a punishment. What it means is that we mentioned many times, one philosopher put it very nicely. He said that anyone whose existence in this, who's not fulfilling his purpose in existence, then his existence is equivalent to his non-existence. Because everything that exists in this world exists with a set order, and in this set order, everything has a purpose. Now, if something does not have a purpose, so the existence of that thing is worthless. That's what it really means. It means its existence is worthless. Okay? But however, we distinguish between two types of non-existence. One type where the person has learnt and he doesn't continue, and the second type where he never has learnt. Alright? Now let's understand, what is the reason for this? Why should this be so? Understand. A person was created, the whole purpose of a person's existence is to appreciate knowledge, to appreciate Chachmas Hashem. That's the only purpose of his existence. So naturally, if he's not in line with that purpose, so there's no reason for his existence. Okay? What about the first case? First case is a little more, requires a little more explanation. What is the first case? First case is, he learned, and he could be a very great Talmud Chacham. You know, one of the letters of the Rambam, somebody wrote to him, and said to him, wrote very apologetically to him, and said to him, said, look, I'm sorry, he said, I'd love to read your writings, but I don't really know Lashon HaKodesh, I don't know Hebrew so well, and please, you have to, I'm not really a scholar or anything, and he demeaned his own position. So the, what? Okay. So good. So the Rambam was very upset about that. Ram was upset about that. Ram said to him, he said, you shouldn't feel that way. He said, I want you to know, he said, anyone that is interested in pursuing knowledge, has the desire to pursue knowledge, he says, is on the highest level. He says, you are my student, he says. And a person who may even be the greatest scholar, but if he does not wish to continue to gain knowledge, he says, that person I have no use for. So that's really this. That's the lamos of Yosef. That's the first thing. But let's understand a little bit of the personality of the individual who, until that point, he deserved to live, apparently, and after that point, we say no, that he doesn't deserve to live. What kind of a personality is that? I mean, the one that does inherently doesn't deserve to exist. Okay, we can understand it. Is the purpose of man is his soul? That's his essence. The soul perceives Chachmas Hashem. God's wisdom. If he doesn't enjoy God's wisdom, so then he's useless. What about the other one? The person who studies to a certain point, reaches a certain point, I saw it already. And that's it. What kind of a personality is that? Sounds like an interesting one. The first man, does he value Torah or not? I want to know. The second man cannot value Torah for the simple reason he doesn't have it. Look, how can you value something if you don't know what it is? You can't value gold if you've never seen it. The only way you can value something is if you're related to it in some way, right? The second man has no value of Torah whatsoever.
The first guy is actually
position vis-a-vis Torah. Yeah. Does the first man value Torah or not? How would you answer? The positive or the negative? What do you say? Yes, he does. Obviously he does. So what's missing? What's he lacking? Would he do it again if he had the chance? Yes, he would definitely do it again. First person is an individual in whom the value of Torah is one of an acquisition. See? Not of a reality. That's the difference. He values it as an acquisition. Actually, this is the philosophy of the average person, really. The average person has that philosophy. The average person who will go want to become a PhD in mathematics or physics or whatever it might be. It's an acquisition. Wants to become a doctor. I have that. All right, now I have that. Now what next? Another acquisition. Okay? So really, that is really the mentality of today's society. A person that, what are you? Oh, you're a professor? Very nice. That's one acquisition. But how much better, how much more do we respect the person that after he became a professor in physics, now he goes on to become a medical doctor or a professor in the literature and in the country. The more letters he has next to his name, the more honorable he is. You see? What is the value of our society? The value of our society is not that the study itself is really the good, but the acquisition of knowledge is the good. That's the outlook of our system we find ourselves in, and this is precisely the philosophy that that Chazal are referring to in the Law Moshe Yosef. That's the philosophy. The person looks knowledge very good, wonderful. It's supposed to be respected, certainly. Of course, it's respected as an acquisition, as a tremendous conquest. This man is a great man. He's a knowledgeable man. It's wonderful. So it's respected as a conquest, but not as a reality. Not as a reality. There was one philosopher that refused a very prominent chair in philosophy in a university. Why? Because he said that I'm too much of a philosopher for that. He says, you see, you don't understand. I'm not a man who has knowledge of philosophy. I'm a man who lives philosophy. And accepting that chair would not really be in line with my way of life as a philosopher. See, that's the difference. But a person who is the professor of knowledge, in the Socratic sense, you see, is an individual who is very proud of his acquisitions. Knowledge is another acquisition. On the contrary, chair of philosophy, a very, very honorable position. The man is esteemed for his knowledge. It's very nice. It's an acquisition. Wonderful. Don't put it down. Your knowledge is a great thing. Wonderful. Nobody's going to deny knowledge. Anybody who's right mind, deny the value of knowledge? Of course not. That's a great value. What is the value? The value is that you are such an esteemed individual. You have this knowledge. It's a wonderful thing. But not that is the activity of life. That's the difference between the first one and the second one. First one has the knowledge as an acquisition. I use it wrong. Yes. Why does he say, take a look at what he says. Very good question. He says like this. He says that Mishu Chochem Veina Rots Lasu Chochem Chochem Lasu Yoma Belibo Kevar Lamadati Kola Torah Kula. I learned all of Torah. V'ra'isi Drachehu Nesivo Seho. Mali Litzarazos. What do I have to keep on trudging along over here? What does it mean I learn Kol HaTorah Kula? Can a person possibly learn Kol HaTorah Kula? I mean, we know it's an impossibility. What does it mean you learn Kol HaTorah Kula? What does it mean? He sees, what does he see? He sees, what? What does he say? What do you mean? What does it mean you learn Kol HaTorah Kula? What does it mean? It means, he sees, what does he see? He sees there will not be any qualitative change from here on in. When a person studies a subject, there's a certain point where he reaches where he makes a qualitative change in himself in terms of the knowledge. A person has no knowledge of mathematics. He studies mathematics, reaches a certain point. Now, after that point, there's not going to be any more qualitative change. It's just involvement. I mean, Einstein made his breakthrough theory of relativity when he was 25 years old. After that, I mean, there wasn't a qualitative change. There was a pursuit of knowledge, trying to find a unified theory. So they're pursuing knowledge, but there's no qualitative change. And at that point, it could have stopped and become a historian and begin and acquire a qualitative change in terms of his knowledge of history. You see? So what the person means is he sees that there is no more qualitative change in terms of his knowledge. Matter of fact, there was somebody that I knew, an older person, he had a fantastic mind. He was really a terrific alumnus. But he stopped learning after a while. So he one time said, look, I got to the point where I could learn Reb Chaim. You know? It's a tremendous level. I reached that point. I learned Reb Chaim already. I've seen it already. That's it. You know what more am I going to say? See? It's true. Maybe true. That qualitatively he's not going to change anymore because he broke through and he sees what Torah is, he sees what the definitions are, he sees the Chachma of Halacha, he sees the Derech of philosophy. But from there on in, the only reason to keep on going is not because of any change, but because this is the only way to live. See? That's the next motivation. So actually he wore out one motivation, and there's no other motivation to keep him going. His motivation wore out. Now what did Pirkei Avos say about such a person? What do they say? Udalom Mosif Yosef. Now he should die. Now his existence is worthless. Why? Because why was it worthwhile up till that point? But from that point on, it's worthless. What does it mean? It was worthwhile. Because the thing is, you cannot say it's worthless just because he had the false, idea. Why is the idea was false? He was learning as an acquisition, which is not true, but it still wasn't worthless. Why wasn't it worthless? Why? Why? Because the other member you're talking about is a person who learns Lakanter. He's learning to destroy others. But a person who just learns Shalosh Shema, no, on the contrary. It's worthwhile. Because a person, you see, you cannot raise a person from the lower level to the higher level without striking the motivation that he works with at present. For instance, I mean you have to reach him in terms of his present motivation. So therefore, it's an impossibility to start learning Torah Lishma. So Slanta says Lola. But every person, when a person is involved, even though he really isn't on the highest level, but he's approaching. This isn't even Lola Shma. Lola Shma Rashi is Shehi Nikra Rav. This isn't even Shehi Nikra Rav. He wants to see it. He wants to gain knowledge of Torah. Not because he wants to be called Rav, because he wants to gain respect. On the contrary, it's even a higher level of Lola than Lola Shma, than real Lola Shma. You see. But why was it valuable? Why was this process valuable? Because he was approaching. The man was approaching Chachma. You have to approach Chachma. You can't just jump into Chachma. So the first step was very good. He was approaching Chachma. But once he reached this point, where he can't convert, after he saw the Chachma, if the Chachma doesn't affect him in a way that the motivation continues because he realizes that this is the true activity of life, so then, unfortunately, he's reached a dead end. And that's it. But up to that point, it was very good. But up to that point, he was approaching Chachma. He put himself in a situation where Chachma could have an effect on him, does have an effect on him. He saw more. You can't say the man didn't get any closer. He got closer. But he reached the end of the line. That's the law of Yosef. And the law Yalef Ketolachayev is the person who simply never had any knowledge whatsoever. His existence is worthless. It's two separate phenomena. Yeah. Why the Chazal really at this point is not interested in explaining to you why this happens to an individual. They're just talking about such a phenomenon. The way that a person should progress is that once he's in the condition where the knowledge is at hand and he does have the knowledge, so then the knowledge should effectuate a change in his first motivation, in his primary motivation towards the knowledge. But sometimes the primary motivation is so strong, so fixed in the individual that the knowledge will not effectuate a change, and he can't go beyond that primary motivation. If that, then that's what you see many times. If that happens, so then that's what it says. The law of Moshe Yosef. Why? What does it mean? Acquisition. If it's an acquisition means a trade-off. That I'll work hard in order to acquire something. That's an acquisition. Trade-off. See, a person who really appreciates learning doesn't consider it a tircha. On the contrary, he realizes that this is the activity of life. There's nothing else. There's nothing else in life. This is it. But a person who sees it as a trade-off, he wants to gain the acquisition, so he's trading his time and his effort in order to receive this benefit. That's his philosophy. That's precisely the philosophy. Because he wants to gain an acquisition. It's not that this activity per se is the activity of life. That's the difference between the two. No. This is it. The Chazal are not talking about insofar as this person exists indirectly for somebody else. He's talking insofar as he himself is concerned. His own benefit. For his own benefit, for his sake, he might as well die. There's no more purpose in his existence. For somebody else's sake, that's God's business. We're talking about the individual himself. Is with the ishtameish betaga cholaf. Very important memory. Means that a person who uses the crown should die. Now, what is this taga? What is this crown that's referring to? The crown. A person who uses the crown. Which crown is it referring to? The crown of Torah. Okay, that's one pshat. There's an interesting pshat that Rashi that they have in there, Rashi. In the brackets, but it's a nice pshat. I'll tell you, it says like this: Mishtamesh betaga cholaf means hamishtamesh betalmidei chachomim v'hamashcher asam. Mashcher. He says what it means is idabek l'shachvar. Shachvar means a respectable. Remember the statement of Chazal. Let's say if a person wants to gain respect, they give you a very easy method. His dabek l'shachvar v'yiftach v'lach. Attach yourself to a great person. And people will bow down to you also, even though you're nothing. See? That's you gain prominence by virtue of association. See? That's the association too. See? But at any rate, that's what Chazal says. So that's Rashi. Rashi says, what does it mean? Osa in Garya, the Talmidei Chachamim Tamid, a person who takes the Talmidei Chachamim. And he puts them into he uses them like he makes use of them in public places. He makes a big dinner, invites the Talmud Chacham to come so that he could utilize them for his own covet. So he says a person like that is nichras b'chatzi yamav. He dies prematurely at half of his age. Mitnei, why? Shemavatlam milishkos ba'avasatara. Rashi says, because he prevents these Talmidei Chachamim from involving themselves and enjoying the beauty of the experience of learning Torah, the love of Torah, because he used them for his own purpose. That's one of the. That's the way Rashi explains it. That's the person why he recognizes that the Talmud Chacham is a respected individual. So he has an affair. He wants the Talmud Chacham to be there. Important to him. Important for his own covet. So that person, Rashi says, that person dies prematurely because he prevents the Talmud Chacham from enjoying the love of Torah. If he leave the Talmud Chacham alone, he would be able to involve himself in the greatest activity in the world, which is the enjoyment of the beauty of Chachma. And this individual prevents him from doing this. So he's meis b'chatzi yamav. That's what Rashi explains. Interesting pshat, huh? He's forced to respond because of a political situation, and he wastes his time. That's what it means. See, an ordinary philosopher has it very easy. Doesn't have any restrictions. You know, he can live the life of a philosopher, and that's it. But in Yad, there's a Talmud Chacham has certain obligations, communal obligations. And he cannot afford to just do exactly what he wants to at all times. He has to involve himself in Tzarchei Tzibur, to make sure that the Tzibur should continue in the right way. So it's a political situation. So he responds to the political situation. But this person who initiated it is at fault. Because he didn't have to, he could have saved them. Yes. Where does he have to go to? That's the question. How many chasas do you have to go to? How many, what? Well, that's Rashi's pshat. None of pshat is like this. Rashi says, HaMeshamesh B'Kisra Shel Torah Kimo Shishaninu Bin Adorim B'Rav Tarfa. We'll soon see. I want to go into the... when we get to the Rambam, we'll deviate a little bit. We'll go into the Rambam's as a whole dissertation on this. Let's take the Rabbeinu Yehuda defines it nicely. It says like this: With Yishtamish B'Tagachalof HaMeshchabe B'Kisra Shel Torah, a person who himself honors himself by the crown of Torah, the Nena B'Kvoda, and enjoys the honor that he receives because of Torah. Va'osa osa kikli, and he uses it like a tool, lasos bo tzracha, to accomplish his needs with it. Hareze nispe, this person is consumed. Kidisnan lakamon al tase matara les gadel bohem, you shouldn't use them as a crown to make yourself great with it. V'lo kadom lachto bohem etzem, and you shouldn't use it as an axe to chop wood. Hillel himself, of course, was a woodchopper. He wouldn't use Torah. We'll soon see the Rambam talks about it at length. We'll go into the Rambam. What does the Rambam say? The Rambam says like this. Ram says, "Umishim ishtamish b'taga yomus ratzaloma, mishim isparnes b'tara." A person who makes a living, earns a living out of Torah, umekabel mimena toelas, and he receives from it a benefit. V'zoseiso kavanoso b'zeh ha'maymar k'moshi yisbayer b'zos ha'masechta. He says, and this was his kavana in this statement, like it's explained in this masechta. V'nemar bo al derach ha'simen. Says, and it is stated, there's a statement that is made, a very short statement that's made as a remez, as a simen. What is the statement? Talmud in Gavra Achrin Allah. That's the statement. A Talmud, yes. A student, yes. But another person, no. Ratzaloma, the Rambam says, this means She'ein mutterlo l'talmud chacham She'yekabel shimush mishum odom ela mitalmidav. Now, the Talmud was not allowed to receive any use or any benefit from any other person aside from his Talmidim. That's what it says. Talmud in, Gavrachrin alam. Okay? It's a restriction. Can't receive any benefit from anybody else unless it's Talmud. Why is that so? Why is it so, really? Why is the Talmud in a Shacharin alam? If you can't receive a benefit from Torah, so why is the Talmud any better? You're still receiving benefit from Torah? Talmud benefits, but... Okay. Yeah, I could understand it's a chelik of Talmud Torah. If you take a person takes his Rebbe for a ride, he has to go someplace, so he could learn. He could learn from him. But let's say the man has a beautiful home in Florida, and he tells he's not a Talmud, and he tells the person to go use his house. So because he's a Talmud Chacham. So if it's another person, so isn't that Talmud Chacham not allowed to do it? He's not allowed to be Nena. But if it's his Talmud, he's allowed to. So the Talmud is so the Rebbe goes off to Florida and lives in his house. What benefit does he get? Well, it's not just halacha. It's not a matter of the fact that they see a Talmud, because the Talmud was nice to his Rebbe, so the Rebbe will feel obligated to him, so he'll teach him better. That's what to say. It's a dead Rebbe. Why is that so, really? Why is it so? Yeah. The fine individual respects Torah. He has the greatest respect for Moshe Feinstein. So he wants to help him out. I mean, it's a tremendous derech eretz. One word. There cannot be any benefactor to Torah. That's what it is. See? There cannot be any benefactor to the institution of Torah. No individual is allowed to feel that he is a benefactor of Torah. Now, a person who is in a shacharina, who's an outsider, so what does he feel? He says, hey, I have the ability to be the benefactor of this Talmud Chacham.